That's our new theme tune. Okay, I've got my hair up. I've got my vibes checked. I am forcibly removed from the Zoom call. Okay. Hey everyone, welcome to the Attic Monologues mid-season Q&A. I am Morgan Greensmith, creator, writer and producer of the Attic Monologues and bane of my director's existence. Speaking of, would you like to introduce yourself, Elle?
Yeah, I mean, hello everybody. I'm Elle M. Clohessy. I am the director of the Attic Monologues and writer wrangler.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very necessary role for every podcast, I feel like, especially when the producer and the writer are the same person, you know? Wrangling is very important. It's a very important skill you can put on your CV, I think.
Truly, truly.
Truly. Okay. So, after the crazy cliffhanger that was episode 10, we thought we'd do a Q&A to answer some questions that our fans might have. And we got a fair number of responses from Tumblr, Twitter, DMs from friends who were very mad. So shall we just jump in?
Yeah.
So the main format of this will be Elle asking the questions with me responding and then going off on tangents and then being wrangled, hopefully, except for when Elle also is off on tangents, because we are both as bad as each other, if we're perfectly honest.
We are.
You know, it's just as soon as you're put in a position of authority, you're like, right, I'm actually going to treat this seriously. Whereas I'm like, I will enable the actors to start talking about whatever they want to talk about. I'm trying to think of a tangent we've been on recently, but I cannot think of one.
No, but I will say it is a little bit like wrangling cats sometimes.
Oh, there's a very good meme that we need to put on Tumblr or Twitter or something.
Yeah, but if we want to jump in, this comes from Anonymous on Tumblr, which says, what would you say is the biggest lesson you learned while making the first 10 episodes? Is there anything you would do differently if you could go back to the start?
Really going off the gate with like the big ones. I mean, this is the first podcast most of us slash all of us have made. So there are a lot of lessons to learn. The biggest lesson that I've been told I should have learned from this is that I should have written the first season before I started recording. But I personally think that's nonsense because I procrastinate everything. So having it out there and like being forced to post by having a schedule has actually made me write more. Otherwise, we'd still be on episode one. So that's a lesson I didn't learn, which is not the question that was asked. Crickets. I think the biggest lesson I have learned is how to delegate and how to talk to other people. And that working with your actors to help them give a voice to the characters that you are creating is incredibly important in sort of making them jump off the page. Yeah. What would you say is your biggest lesson, Elle?
Oh, I mean, I have learned a lot about scheduling. I have learned so much about scheduling.
All those lettuce meets and when to meets.
Truly. But it is about being flexible and being able to adapt quite quickly when you have sort of last minute changes and being like, well, guess we're going to do some independent recording sessions now, lads.
Yeah, asynchronous recording is not it, lads, I'll say that much. Mainly because I have to fill in for whatever actor's not there. So, and I put my whole soul into it. I really do. You know, there was
you truly
one,
do.
There was that one episode where I was playing four different characters.
Yeah.
It was chaos. Yeah.
What's great is when we sometimes forget that all four of those actors aren't there, and so Morgan just spent five pages talking to themselves before we realised we could skip.
It's great fun. Great fun, truly. Truly.
In terms of what I do differently, I don't think I'd do anything differently because I kind of had to do these 10 episodes to get here, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Like, I wouldn't be able to rewind the clock and know the lessons I know now.
Yeah. Deep. Very deep. We love that.
Right. So for the next question, from Anonymous, what was the building of the caramel and clove before it became the caramel and clove?
Oh, I love that. I love that question. I mean, I imagine the caramel and clove as, like, now looking very much like one of those indie coffee shop cafes that does, you know, like karaoke nights and stuff like that. So I think probably a nightclub. It's probably a nightclub. Let's go with that. I like that. And then it got, so you can still, if you were to rip out all the like wood paneling, there'd be like black paint and, you know, and like, there's probably a glitter ball they've got in the back room that they bust out for like employee only parties. Yeah.
Nice. I worked at a club for like 2 years, Morgan.
So you don't agree with me romanticizing nightclubs?
Oh, absolutely not.
I do
if
not
you rip up those, if you rip up those wooden floorboards, you're just going to find a lot of sticky plastic flooring.
I mean, I was going to say that, but I didn't want to be grim because let's be real, Ambrose follows his health code and safety. He cleaned those floors before he put down the wood paneling.
A question from at Sharpsnooter on Twitter is, since we know Nyx knows what a kobold is and Bella listens to the Adventure Zone, have the two of them played D&D or any other TTRPG together? And what characters would they and the others choose in Monster of the Week or D&D?
Okay, so I think that Nyx and Bella have played D&D together. Probably in the year that Lola and Seth were away. There was originally like a little scene in episode 8 where they sort of complained about the fact that Lola refused to play with them. But that got cut. But I think, I mean, when I was creating all the characters, I did give them all D&D classes because, you know, that's how I help characterize things with like a lot of stuff. But as of what they themselves would play, I think that'd be very different. So, for example, I think Bella is probably a... I did actually have this written down, but I think... But okay, I think Bella would play a druid. I think she is a wizard. Mm. I think Nyx would play a barbarian, but is... a warlock. That's my vibes. That's what I'm going with.
Very vibey.
As for the others, I don't think either of them have played D&D, but I think that Lola is a druid and Seth's a wizard, probably maybe an artificer. I don't know. And I haven't played Monster of the Week enough to say anything about it. And also, if I tried to go into archetypes for Monster of the Week, I would end up giving up spoilers. So I'm gonna stay clam on that one. Maybe send me this question again in like 10 months' time. And we'll see. We'll see.
In a similar vein, from at Soren Briarwood on Twitter, if the characters had His Dark Materials-esque demons, what animals would they play? And it might be daemons, but I don't know the pronunciation.
I don't know the pronunciation either. See, I should have been ready for this question because Soren is very into demons. Soren being our social media manager. So I should have expected this question. I should have prepared for this question. I want to say Crow for Bella, but that's real obvious because her name is Bella Crow. So I'm going to go with Mouse for Bella. I'm going to go but then again, I was listening to the Spirits podcast episode on familiars the other day, and they were talking about how your demon is actually something opposite to yourself that sort of you don't show very often, that sort of pushes you to be the like other side of yourself. So maybe I'd actually go with like a spider for Bella, like something poisonous, I think. Whereas Nick's, my instinct would be like parrot or something. But I think actually they'd probably be more like a dog or something. I don't know the different breeds of dogs because I've never understood. I'm a cat person. I'm going to out myself now. I am a cat person. But I think Nick's would be a dog familiar or a dog demon, even though they are a cat person as well. One of those, like, one of the ones with the really long ears.
As a note from the editor, this tangent went on for a while and didn't really come to a conclusion. We determined after the fact that the dog in question was a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel.
Yeah, let's just quit where we're ahead and we say fluffy brown and white dog with long ears. Anyway, that's... Should I answer... There's so many characters in this podcast now. I think I'm just going to go with Nyx and Bella. Maybe.
One thing Morgan does really well is tell me at the start of the season, this is how many characters we have, and then give me a rolling update of how many other people we need to cast.
Yeah, it was only 5 characters, and then it was another character in episode 3, and then another character in episode 5, and another character in episode whatever it was. I just keep going. You can't stop creative genius. If there has to be another character, there has to be another character. I don't know what you want from me, Elle.
Right, from Anonymous, what do the characters eat for breakfast?
That's a great question, isn't it? Nyx sleeps through breakfast, so... no, Nyx has a monster for breakfast, as in, like, the energy drink, because they are a heathen, but they're also a Gen Z queer person, so they drink monster for breakfast. I think Bella sleeps through breakfast. Yeah.
But surely, like, breakfast is just the first thing you eat when you get up.
I mean, technically, because you're breaking your fast.
Yeah.
Okay, so Bella eats breakfast at 5 p.m. and it is like ice cream or cold custard or something like that. Like, Bella is an absolute heathen. Like, we rag on Nyx for being a heathen, but like, Bella, her food combinations are directly from hell. Directly. Absolute heathen energy. So yeah, she has cold custard for breakfast at 5 p.m. That's canon now.
What about Seth and Lola?
I mean, Seth gets up at a very regular schedule. He gets up at 8 a.m. He has his bowl of porridge or like Cheerios and he starts studying at 9. Like, he's very organized. I think Lola has like a latte for breakfast and then she like picks up like a piece of fruit on the way out of the house, I think. You know, she's like very organized. And she, of course, she has non-dairy milk because she is quote unquote a vegan. And by quote unquote, I mean that she keeps saying to everybody that she's going to be a vegan this year and immediately goes out for cheesy chips. So, but she does drink her non-dairy milks. She's probably a coconut milk person. Coconut milk latte. There we go.
This is more a question for you, Morgan.
For me.
In terms of as the writer.
Oh dear.
What is your favourite writing snack? That's been asked by Anonymous.
I mean, the way I write is so chaotic that I don't really eat while I'm writing. I just go into a fugue state and write. But does tea count as a snack? Because I drink tea when I'm writing. I drink a lot of tea when I'm writing.
I mean, you are quite a tea aficionado, so I would say that that can count.
Okay, good, good, good. I mean, obviously I eat a lot of chocolate when I'm writing, actually, as well. That's got to be said, you know. Yeah, tea and chocolate. Specifically, I like a good green tea if I'm writing in the morning, and then like a red bush in the evening. Ginger tea, that kind of vibe. And then just whatever chocolate I can get my hands on. Just whatever. I go for like a walk at 10 p.m., go get chocolate, and then I write.
I don't know enough about tea to know what the different types are, so
Yeah, well, I'm trying to educate you, but you keep committing tea crimes, Elle. Okay, for the listeners, I need to explain this. We have a running joke on the Attic Monologues Discord now because Elle is an absolute just heretic when it comes to tea. Okay, explain your tea making process, please, Elle. We're gonna make this a segue because this is very important. Explain.
Okay, sure. When you say process, I boil water and I stick a tea bag in it.
That's a good start.
And then I have it with a large amount of milk because I basically want to be drinking cold tea. But I only found out recently you need to actually brew tea before you can make iced tea.
Crazy how that works. Crazy.
The thing that you all got mad about was me drinking it out of a, like, glass.
Yeah, I mean, drinking it out of a glass is bad, and one day I will buy you a mug. But it's the fact that it's a tea latte that hasn't brewed, so it's actually just milk and water with a tea bag in it. Like, you gotta either cold brew the tea and drink it like that, or you gotta, like, heat it up on the stove with, like, milk with the tea stuff in it. And then I'm at my wit's end. Every day I wake up and you've posted a different tea crime on the chat, and I die a little inside every single time.
I mean, I do think my best at the moment was the most recent one where I was just drinking cold brew that I hadn't actually brewed. And everybody got very angry at me.
It's just milk with a tea bag in it.
And
I give up.
Another question from Anonymous is, what do you listen to while writing?
Oh my god, I'm so ready for this question. I literally spent all of yesterday making playlists for our Patreon, which, speaking of, our Patreon will be out in about 2 weeks' time from when this drops, so go check that out. But I make, like, in my writing process before, like, whilst I'm still conceptualizing the characters, I made playlists for every single character who was going to be, like, a main character. And I just add to them continuously because I make playlists every month for, like, what I want to download. And then I just add stuff to them, you know? So, yeah, I just listen. If I'm in a, like, particularly, like, Nyx-centric episode, I'll listen to my Nyx playlist. If it's a particularly depressing episode, I'll listen to my Nyx The B-Sides playlist, which is more of the downer songs that will conceptualize the later seasons. You know, if it's a particularly Bella vibe, then, or if I just want to be depressed, I'll listen to the Bella playlist. Because, like, you know, in writing mood, not just I want to have depression, let's put on the Bella playlist, but, like, if I'm writing a particularly, like, sad scene, then I will put on my Bella playlist because a lot of her songs are quite a downer. And you can find all these playlists on my Spotify, which is linked on our website, theatticmonologues.co.uk or .com if you're not from the UK. Tragically for you. Or not tragically, with the way everything's going. But anyway. Yeah, so I listen to a lot of random music. There's a lot of Dodie. There's a lot of Noah Kahan, Halsey, stuff like that. You know, the vibes. Matt Mason, Youngblood, Grandson, The Amazing Devil, Peach PRC. It's just a very eclectic mix, if I'm honest. Very chaotic. Juniper Vale.
You do take suggestions from our actors and us when we find a particular song and just at you.
Yeah, we have like a playlist channel on our Discord. It's very good. Very good vibes. Mother Mother, that's another one. It's very chaotic.
Moving on to a question from Anonymous on Tumblr.
Ooh.
This is a question for Morgan. Was it nerve-wracking at all writing Nyx as non-binary, given that so few non-binary protagonists exist in media at present? Is it ever a choice you questioned in the hopes of appealing to a wider audience?
I did look at this question before because I had to have a think about it. Was it nerve-wracking? No. It came about very naturally. When I'm writing, the gender of a character is often something that comes up quite late in the process of making them, probably because I myself am non-binary. So gender is not something that I really understand or engage with. So a lot of my characters, their gender is fluctuating and questioning during the actual creation process. So them being non-binary came about quite naturally. And it wasn't nerve-wracking. It was just like, this character is non-binary. That is a fact. You know, I just like, I slipped into those pronouns quite easily and it made sense. Also, once I figured out they were non-binary, I stuck to that gun pretty heavily and I sort of made it quite an important part of who they are. You know, like, it's not their entire personality, as some people complain about with like some like fictional queer characters, but it is a very large part of their personality because it has shaped who they are. It's a very important part of who they are. It's a very important to them personally. So I wanted to make it very clear going in from like an early episode so that the people listening also were very aware of it. And it wasn't just something that just sort of was put in for token representation and they're not discussed at all. Like, it is very important to them as a person, how it shaped them and stuff like that. Is it ever a choice that I questioned in the hopes of appealing to a wider audience? I will be honest, it did cross my mind when we were sort of a few episodes in already. Just sort of, there was the sort of moment of, did I make a mistake? Would my podcast do better if my main character was not non-binary? And that did cross my mind very briefly as just sort of a thought. But at the end of the day, it was very important to me that my protagonist was non-binary because the characters are so based on me and my experiences. And I, as a non-binary person, am writing through Nyx and sort of both trying to give myself an outlet for that experience and those feelings, but also give people, you know, that representation that they don't get, you know, especially non-binary characters, they don't really get those much. I mean, a lot more in podcasts than in other places, but it's so important to have non-binary protagonists. So no, it wasn't nerve-wracking. No, I don't regret it. Everyone should have non-binary characters in their podcasts, basically. You know, everyone's better if they're little. Also, actually, I will say, everybody I write is a little genderqueer because I am genderqueer. So, yeah, everyone's a little non-binary. You know, even if they're cis, they're a little non-binary because they were made by a non-binary person, therefore. So, yeah.
Another question we have is, linking to the discussion earlier, character's favourite teas?
Okay, so Bella is a tea aficionado. Bella likes a good oolong because that's the fanciest tea that I can think of. So Bella's an oolong person. Nyx was a traditionalist, just very basic builder's brew until moving in with Bella, and then had access to her entire tea collection, which is extensive and is based on my tea collection, and is now definitely sort of a spiced tea person, you know, like ginger teas. They like something that's like gonna burn their tongue off, basically, you know, ginger, black pepper, chili, you know, all the things that probably should not be in teas. They're like, ah, yes, this is what I want from a tea. Ambrose is a good like fruit chamomile kind of guy. Avery's a coffee person, much to Ambrose's chagrin. Seth and Lola are also coffee people, unfortunately, although they will partake in a green tea occasionally, or like a normal tea. Yeah, is that everybody? There's too many characters in this podcast.
I mean, are any of them tea heathens?
I think I think Adri is a tea heathen, but specifically only when Ambrose is around. Like, oh, they definitely. Specifically are like, ah, my husband is here. I will now pour a gallon of milk in and then put the tea bag in. They are very much like, I am here to cause crimes on purpose. Yeah. Yeah.
From @superpowerednerds on Tumblr. when will you stop emotionally hurting my children?
Never. Never. Ever. They're gonna suffer forever. We'll see. I guess you'll have to listen to the podcast to find out if they, you know, who can say? Who can say? Will I pull a Magnus Archives? Will I pull a some other media that ends happily? I don't really watch happy media. So I like watching my characters go through it and then come out the other side, you know?
Mm.
You know, I come from the fan fiction world where hurt comfort is the best category, like unequivocally. And I will not be taking questions at this time, except I am because this is a Q&A. But you know what I mean.
Certainly. And then kind of a similar vein from @KJPSheedy on Twitter. Which is more important, plot or character development, and why?
Character development. That's the end of the question. No, I think character development is the most important, A, because I come from the world of fan fiction where it's all about character exploration, really. But also because of the way that this whole show is paced, especially just podcasts in general, exploring the characters, trying to put this into words, characters are what I come to a story for. I don't particularly, like, plot is very important in how it affects the characters. You know, so characters should drive plot. Plot should not drive characters. If your plot is what drives the characters, I don't care about it. I mean, like, it's a very valid way to read and it's a very valid way to structure a story. But personally, if I don't care about the characters or the character, how the characters are developing, then I can't engage in a plot. I think that they're codependent, but at the end of the day, the characters are what drive the show and what make the show interesting in any capacity, but especially in the outer monologues for me, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, and then also from KJPSheedy, how many hours of work, writing, rehearsal, recording, post-production go into a typical 30 minutes of finished work? What is the split and which do you enjoy most?
Okay, so writing is absolute chaos because I write in little bits. I write it in my notebook, I type it up, then I write it back in my notebook, and then I type it up again, and then I edit it, and then I send it over to Elle, and then she notes on things, and then it finally goes through to the actors. So I would say it's very hard to quantify. Lots, because it's always in the back of my brain, it's always kind of percolating, and I'm always just like writing little bits and pieces. So writing is definitely the bit that takes the most time, I would say, apart from the audio editing. Rehearsal, we do one rehearsal and then we record twice is how it works for us. So rehearsal and recording altogether is like 2 hours, 3 hours per episode. So not much time. And then we hand the episode over to Anna and she goes into her little sound cave and makes magic and then comes out with a finished episode. So yeah, I definitely enjoy the recording most because I don't have to do anything. I just sit there and listen and cry or the actors make me cry. So yeah.
Morgan is the professional hype man drawing.
Yeah. I just sit there and go, oh my God, that line. I'm on the floor. I'm shaking. I'm crying. And the actors are just like, thank you. What's your favorite part?
I mean, obviously I do enjoy recording because that's the bit that I'm most involved in. but yeah, and recording, can take longer depending on how many characters are in scenes and based on acts availability.
Mm.
But no, yeah, obviously recording is very fun. And while Morgan is the professional hype man, I'm there being like, yeah, that was great. I want you to do this one again and this one and change this. Like, it was amazing, but also.
But also change
it. Do it again.
Yeah. Now, actually, I think my favorite part of the process is just appearing in Elle's DMs at 3 a.m. and going, hey, I had this really heartbreaking idea. And then she goes, oh, cool. Here's how to make it even worse. And then we just go on about it for 3 hours until we've spiraled into like later seasons and like tragic content that will never be known ever, but it's very important to our hearts.
It is. I mean, I enjoy on the script editing side, alongside my like valid critiques, is me just making memes at Morgan of making wildly inappropriate jokes on certain things.
You know, as Superpowered Nerds on Tumblr said, you know, when will you stop emotionally hurting my children? And I always reply, never. I think it's really important to note that I am like doing so much movement with my hands whilst I answer these questions, because I do talk so much with my hands. So y'all are missing a lot of the context that Elle gets of me just going, you don't understand. And I'm like shaking my hands. Yeah. It's very fun.
There's a couple of questions about characters' hair that I think we can sort of schmoosh into one.
Yes, okay.
So how many times has Nyx dyed their hair? How many times have Bella and Nyx cut each other's hair? And do any of the characters have an undercut?
Okay, Nyx has lost count of the times they've dyed their hair. They've been dyeing their hair since they were 15, and it wasn't allowed in school rules, but they were non-binary, so like the teachers were scared of saying anything about their like dress code in fear of being like, you know, yelled at for being quote unquote transphobic. So they just have been dyeing their hair since they were 15. You know, they've gone blue, they've gone red, they've gone purple, they've gone green, they've gone yellow, they've gone every color, they've gone lots of colors at the same time. This is my headcanon, of course. Like, I think that Nyx dyes their hair all the time, but specifically in the actual show, I do describe their hair just as crazy. So that, you know, people can take what they want from that. You know, maybe they've got one side up, one side down. Maybe they've got one side shorter than the other. Maybe they got a mullet before it was cool. You know, it's up for interpretation. But personally, I think that they've dyed their hair many times. They have an undercut and Bella reshaves it all the time. Is my headcanon. Bella probably just doesn't cut her hair. Bella just has super, super long hair. But then also, does she have a bob cut? I don't know. I don't want to really like answer questions about like appearance. Like, these are just the vibes I have, is like Bella either just does not cut her hair or she keeps it bald. You know, she's very chaotic. They're all very chaotic in my head. I really can't visualize. So yeah, the characters look how you want them to look. No, but I think they're both very anti-hairdressers. I will say that much. They're both like, too expensive, not necessary. Why? Listeners, tell me your headcanons for how they look. Tell me what hair you think they have.
And I think the last question we have for you, Morgan, because there's one for me, is...
For you? I'm sorry, am I not the main character? I'm a bit rude.
From Anonymous again, is what socks do the characters wear?
Okay. I think Bella wears knee-high black socks because she never moved out of her Tumblr emo phase. And they are incredibly valid as a fashion choice. I think Nyx wears stripy, odd socks. Like, they have not worn the same socks in a long time. It's got to be odd, just for the vibes. Everyone else, I think, is relatively normal when it comes to socks. I think Ambrose has some, like, secret, like, a secret collection of funky socks, but no one can see them because he's wearing like boots at all times, so no one can see the funky socks. Yeah, that's what I think. Let's move on. Elle, what is your favourite part about directing the show?
I have two favourite parts of directing the show that are in direct contrast to each other.
Okay. Interesting.
So one is when, so we do a read-through, and with the read-through, I just kind of let the actors go at it, because it's also sort of a vocal warm-up. It's a chance for them to get comfortable and all that. And sometimes they will read a line exactly how I was thinking of directing it in my head. And then I'm like, ah, magnificent. We are on the same page. Wonderful. Other times, actors will read a line in a completely different direction than I was thinking of, and it works. And that is also very exciting, because it's a cool little mesh of kind of Morgan's writing, my directing, the actor's interpretation, turning into good soup.
Good soup.
For lack of a better term. I also like when we're recording some of our heavier scenes, we will have more of a break in between takes, just because obviously it gets very heavy and we want everybody to be happy. So then I will just come up with, I will just tell stories about things that have happened in my life that are incredibly chaotic and quite funny.
Just to get the good vibes.
Truly, you know, examples that I'm not going to go into details of include the time that my dog locked me out of the house. and things like that.
We absolutely love that. That's how we end up on our tangents, and then you're the one who has to still bring us back. You're like, I started this tangent and I will end it too. I brought you into this world and I can take you out of it.
Truly, I'll be like, let's have a nice little breather, here's a little thing, and then it'll be like, oh, somehow we've got onto like early noughties TV shows aimed at children and their effects in the modern day.
This is a very important segue. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I was a particular fan of our Edmund Narnia discourse segue. It was a very good one for me personally, because I have a lot of opinions about it. So
I have never seen or read Narnia. So
hang on. How did I not find this out in our Narnia Edmund discourse segue?
I think you were already so deep, and I have like enough cultural osmosis to vaguely know what's going on about that. So I was just like, I'm just going to sit back and like wait for this to run its course.
Another note from the editor. This was a very long tangent, so I stopped it here. The rest of it can be heard at the end of the Q&A session, should you wish to do so.
Oh, I can speak to actually my least favourite part about directing the show, which is having to label sections when they are not labelled as scenes, because sometimes Morgan will send me a document and it will say scene one, and that will be the entire 27 pages of the script. And obviously you can't record that all in one take. So then I start having to come up with a number system that doesn't always work.
Yeah, see, that sounds like a you problem. See, I write the episode. That's where I'm finished. You have to number the bits. And then Anna has to hunt you down for numbering them wrong.
So, and yet she has not found me.
Yet. Give her time.
But I think that is all the questions.
Oh my God. We're done? Crazy.
We are.
Okay. Let's go for a closing statement. Thank you so much to everybody for listening to this Q&A episode that has gone very chaotic, very off tangent, as you know, as we said it would. You know, you get what we promised on the tin. So I hope you have enjoyed. If you have any more questions, we will be doing a second Q&A at the end of season one. So episode 11 will kick off the second half of season one, and that will be on February 23rd. 5 p.m. Wednesday. And until then, we have a trailer for the mid-season out on our feed. Find us on any of our socials that will be linked in the show notes below. And have an amazing February. Thank you for listening. Goodbye. I hope that we get to keep in our Narnia tangent because I think it's very important. It's very important.
I think that our Narnia tangent should be kept in.
When you say our Narnia tangent, you mean me mentioning offhandedly that I've never seen it, and then you proceeding into a 2-minute rant about how I can exist as a human in this world without having consumed this piece of media.
It was a 5-minute rant, thank you very much. And that was short.
Osmosis.
I cut that short, Elle. I cut that short. Absolute travesty. Right, okay, I'm getting on a train right now. I'm coming to your house and we're going to watch all 3 Narnia movies, despite the fact that the third one is bad, and we're going to vibe. How can you not have seen at least the first one?
Very easily.
Okay, but it's literally the entire script of that movie is burned into my brain. Every cinematic moment, every music beat is on my eyelids. Like, I do not understand. Like, how are you a person? How do you exist without this cultural touchstone that is the Narnia movie?
Listen, I do not consume a lot of media that isn't podcasts, but I consume a lot of cultural osmosis, so I know enough to get me through most situations. And maybe, like, I vaguely get the vibes of this. Never seen it, never will. But
okay, but I literally watched this movie like every day for a year when I was 7. Like,
I did not.
Well, I can tell. I can tell. I am judging you. I am judging you. Next time I see you, we're watching Narnia. We're going to make a night of it. We're going to watch Narnia. Yeah.
There are more than 3 books, right?
There are 7 books.
Oh, okay. And then they only made 3 movies.
They only made 3 movies, yeah. I did actually only read 6 of the books because I did, like, traitor that I am, I did not finish The Horse and His Boy, which is the 3rd book. But I am going to go reread them because I was like, 7 at the time, so I think they deserve a reread. Yeah, and no, I do not like the Christian allegory, but the vibes, it's all about the trauma of coming back from a world where you experienced all this trauma and now you have to pretend that you're a normal kid when you're actually like a full adult in like a kid's body and you've seen magic but it's been taken away from you. This is like a defining part of my character as a person is the Narnia movie.
I will say, to speak to that, if you guys like those vibes, listen to Back Again, Back Again. I don't know if we can wrap another podcast on this, but yeah. Why not?
Genuinely. Oh. Like, one day I will get around to finishing writing my Portal fantasy book that I started when I was 16. One day. But until then, go listen to Back Again, Back Again. Also, The Magicians, despite the fact that season 4 is awful, The Magicians does slap.